This is Washington Watch with Tony Perkins, your daily voice in Washington, D.C. on the issues of faith, family, and freedom. And now, here's your host, Family Research Council President Tony Perkins.
Wait just a minute. No, it's not Tony. It's Eben Fowler again in this Friday, sitting in for my friend Tony Perkins. So glad to have you along on another edition of Washington Watch. Well, we're going to have some interesting stuff today, as usual. We're going to continue to unpack the tax reform bill. Remember last Friday, we talked about that as well. FRC's Ken Blackwell will help us look at the differences between the Senate and House tax proposals and the reforms that give a boost for families and free speech. It's complicated. You know, the whole legislative process is complicated, and Ken's going to help us break it down and kind of give us an update of where we are on this thing. It's important to all of us, of course. And tomorrow's Veterans Day, we'll be honored to talk with retired Navy Commander John Wells. He recently declined an award from the New Orleans Saints football team, and he'll tell us why. And 40 Days for Life just ended. Steve Carlin will be here to share the many positive advances that came from the 40 Days campaigns all across the country and around the world. And if you're not familiar with 40 Days for Life, I want you to hang with us. We're going to take the whole second half of the program to talk to Steve about the great work that 40 Days is doing and how you can get involved. And we'll be taking your calls, and hopefully we're going to try to get some people who have actually participated in 40 Days for Life campaigns to call in and tell us what that was like. So if you've done that, we'd love to hear from you. Well, as discussed on yesterday's program, Senate Republican leaders released their version of a tax bill, the Tax Cuts and Jobs Act. And next week, the House is set to vote on its version of the tax bill. Family Research Council praised the GOP's Tax Cuts and Jobs Act, TCJA, also called H.R. 1. It was approved yesterday by the House Ways and Means Committee, and it's a bill that increases the child tax credit, expands education savings accounts to include unborn children. We talked about that last week. That's pretty cool. It provides for free speech fairness for all nonprofits, including churches and faith-based groups. It removes most marriage penalties, and it includes an adoption tax credit. Well, joining us now is former Ohio Secretary of State Ken Blackwell. He's also the Senior Fellow for Human Rights and Constitutional Governance at, boy, that's a long one, at the Family Research Council. He also serves on the Presidential Advisory Commission on Election Integrity. Ken, welcome to Washington Watch.
Evan, good to be with you, sir.
It is so good to talk with you today. I want to set this up, Ken, first with some audio clips from House Speaker Paul Ryan.
Well, this has been another very important week for tax reform. Really, it's an important week for families out across America. We're not doing this for political benefit. We're doing this to help improve people's lives. We're doing this to get this country back on track. We're doing this to get economic growth. Look, we haven't had a 3% economy in about a decade. Do you know what happens to a country that grows so slowly? Wages are flat. Living standards get flat. Economic anxiety and insecurity goes up. That's what's happening in this country today. We're doing this the right way. We're doing this the regular order way. It takes time, but trust me, we're going to get this over the finish line. We ran in 2016 on doing this tax reform. The president ran on doing this tax cut and tax reform. So this is about fulfilling our promises to the American people.
Well, Ken, first of all, if you would give us an update on where the process is right now. Assume that that I know nothing, which is pretty close to the truth, about what the process, where it's been, where it's going.
Well, the House has come forth with its plan, its bill. The Senate will do so next week, and then it will go to conference, and they will hammer out a final bill. Seek passage, and then once it passes, put it on the desk of the president for signature. The president wants to have all of this done before Christmas at the latest. There are some eager beavers who think that they can get this done by the end of November. We'll see. But look, Evan, let me just say that if you look at tendencies of big authoritarian states, totalitarian states, or big welfare states, they do two things. They weaken the family, and they silence the church. These packages that will come forth will, in fact, do away with the Johnson Amendment, which attempts to silence the church or intimidate the church in the public square. And secondly, it will get more money into working families, middle-class families across the nation. So lifting incomes of middle-class families and actually facilitating economic growth. For every 1% of economic growth that we realize, that's $1 trillion coming back into the American economy. And that means, again, lifting incomes, empowering families, and that's what the president has promised, and I think that's what the Republicans will deliver on.
Now, I heard that this committee vote was party line. Is that correct, first of all?
That's correct, and I think the Republicans have to be ready to do this alone, and they have to do it on a very principled basis. It has to be growth-oriented. Look, there's $2 to $4 trillion sitting offshore because we have an unfriendly capital, unfriendly tax environment for capital. Now, if we change it and we get those dollars coming back into the city and back into the nation, what we have is that we have a growth boom in our cities and in our towns and in our counties, and as a consequence, we see more people working. Look, we spent a whole 2 years criticizing Barack Obama because of a low labor participation rate. If we want to boost that labor participation rate, it means that we have to get more dollars into our economy, facilitate growth, produce jobs, lift wages, and we, in fact, will create an opportunity society, not an expansion of the welfare state. And that's what these chambers of Congress will get done over the next month, if not sooner. They will have a tax package that is capital friendly, but more importantly, worker and family friendly. And that's the sort of boost in the well-being of the nation's families that the president has promised.
Ken, I want to focus on, you know, I alluded to it here when I asked you if the committee vote was party line, and I want you to try to help us understand, if you can. It seems like the Democrats are just sort of checking out on this thing entirely, and they're making a number of accusations. One is that their voices are not being heard, and I don't know whether that's true or not. Hopefully you can tell us whether that is the case. And that it is this whole thing is just a bill that would help only the rich. And the little bit of analysis I've done on it, that does not seem to be the case at all. The high-end tax rate is still there. The richest, however many percent you want to talk about, are still paying most of the taxes, even after, if this bill goes through. And yeah, you know, they may get a break here and there, but can you answer either one of those questions? Is why are the Democrats staying on the sidelines? They just don't even want to touch this thing, and that's really unfortunate.
And it flies in the face of history. JFK, President Kennedy, basically turned a phrase, rising tide lifts all boats.
That's right.
That's why he, in fact, was for tax cuts across the board. Ronald Reagan's tax cuts were across the board. Look, at the end of the day, you want to cut taxes for all taxpayers. You want to get middle-class relief in terms of letting them keep more of their income directed towards their family's needs and priorities, and you want to cut the tax rates for the upper-income folks who, in fact, right now are paying most of the taxes, but more importantly, they're sitting on a lot of capital that they need to be putting back to work by creating innovative enterprises, creating jobs, and giving people opportunities to work. So the Democrats are classic redistributionists. They are satisfied with this slow, anemic growth that we've realized over the past 8 years, and as a consequence, they desire to play musical chairs at the table of opportunity in this country. Why not go back to the Kennedy notion that a rising tide, meaning growth, accelerated economic growth lifts all boats. And that has been our experience over the last 100 years. When we've accelerated economic growth, we've in fact seen more people come up out of poverty. We've seen the middle class have more control over their lives, and we've seen the wealthy continue to invest and reinvest in our economies.
Yeah, and it just, you know, a first grader could figure that out, that you know, if the economy is better, it's better for everybody. And I would assume that regardless of what party you belong to, your goal is to see your constituents do better, not worse. And, you know, the tax bill hasn't even been passed yet. It's still, you know, in the machinations of the sausage factory at the moment. But the things that we're seeing in the economy just since the inauguration are amazing in terms of employment and growth and joblessness and food stamps and all of that. Those indicators are all going in the right direction. And this, you know, $2-4 trillion that you talked about that's offshore, by golly, if that stuff comes in, look out.
Oh, right? Absolutely. And look, Jesse Jackson has proven that even a broken clock is right twice a day.
Twice a day.
And when he said that capitalism without capital is just another ism, you know, so we in fact need to understand that America has become the most prosperous, the most diverse democracy in all of human history because we've believed in free markets, free men, free women doing good things together, and we haven't focused on a strong, muscular, central government. But they do in authoritarian and authoritarian states, and they do in big welfare states. And we have one party that believes in expanding the welfare state, and I'm pulling on the Republican Party to be the party that will build an opportunity society that's more consistent with the robust years of economic growth and the breakdown of the walls that have existed that have blocked people from participating in the robust economy that the smart economic decisions have created.
Yeah, well, to me, it boils down to maybe a couple of things. One is they don't want to see anything good happen under a Trump administration because they can't stand the guy. And secondly, possibly, is that it's a complete ideological and philosophical difference, and you alluded to it, in terms of redistributionist views versus capitalism. Capitalism's not perfect, but it sure helps many more people. It's been shown around the world to be the case.
That's right. Well,
I want to ask you a little bit here in the last couple of minutes. You know, we talked about the Free Speech Fairness Act, the Johnson Amendment repeal, and we've got about 60 seconds. So, very quickly, do you think that that's going to actually end up getting done?
Yeah, that will get done. And let me just say, Evan, this has been a real special day for me. I've talked to you and Sarah, your daughter.
Oh, fantastic. She might even be listening. If you are, Sarah, howdy. Well, thank you, Ken. It's just a pleasure talking with you. Thanks for jumping on with us today. We appreciate it, man. Well, coming up next, a disabled Navy veteran who served in the Navy from 1972 to 1994 and later became an attorney specializing in military and veterans law has declined an award from the New Orleans Saints football team. We'll ask him why, and we'll also find out something about his organization, which is out there helping veterans. You're listening to Washington Watch. Evan Fowler sitting in today for Tony Perkins. We'll be right back after this break. Glad to have you with us.
We've gone from give me liberty or give me death to take care of me, please. What has happened to the American spirit? Our colleges were once bastions of free speech. Now they're bastions of speech codes. Our culture once rewarded independence. Now it rewards victimhood. Parents once taught their kids how to fend for themselves. Now, any parent who tries may get a visit from the police. In a talk about his new book, Not a Daycare, Dr. Everett Piper, president of Oklahoma Wesleyan University, takes a hard look at what's happening around the country, including demands for safe spaces and trigger warnings at universities like Yale, Brandeis, and Oberlin, and digs in his heels against the sad and dangerous dumbing down of the American spirit. Dr. Piper has become known for his passionate defense of intellectual freedom, and he challenges the intolerant tolerance of today's academic community. Go to frc.org/speakers to watch. Again, that's frc.org/speakers. In a free country like ours, it's easy to forget that slavery still exists. Human beings are being trafficked and sold for sex against their will. Human trafficking is a horrifying scourge that continues to haunt America, particularly through the proliferation of illegal online transactions between traffickers and buyers. As part of the FRC Speaker Series, Congresswoman Ann Wagner discusses congressional anti-human trafficking initiatives and how the conservative community can best be engaged in combating this horrific crime. Congresswoman Wagner, who introduced highly anticipated legislation in April that allows states and victims to fight online sex trafficking, focuses on online sex trafficking via Backpage.com and other websites, and confronting the demand for sex trafficking in American culture. Find out more about Congresswoman Wagner's recent legislation and ways you can help stop trafficking at frc.org/speakers. Again, that is frc.org/speakers.
Is being right enough to win an election? Many tend to believe that being right, in the sense of being factually correct, is sufficient to win in politics. Unfortunately, political history proves otherwise. The candidate who organizes and communicates the best will beat the opposition, no matter how right the other side is. Christians who are running for public office have a moral obligation to study and learn how to win. They must discover the real nature of politics. Robert Arnakis knows how to win. As senior director for the Leadership Institute, the nation's premier public policy training organization, he has 15 years of grassroots organizing, campaign, fundraising, and communications experience, and has established himself as one of the country's top political trainers. Here, Mr. Arnakis discusses the real nature of politics and how to overcome the odds to win an election. Go to frc.org/speakers to view this timely discussion.
This Veterans Day, we honor the many veterans who have fought to keep us safe and free. They went not for conquest and not for gain, but only to protect the anguished and the innocent. They suffered greatly, and by their heroism in a thousand forgotten battles, they added a luster to the codes we hold dear: duty, honor, country, fidelity, bravery, integrity. To our nation's veterans, for all that you do, thank you.
Amen. Well, Veterans Day is tomorrow. It's a day when we honor the sacrifices of all those who serve and have served. Honor for our nation's veterans has been lacking in recent weeks as NFL players take a knee during the national anthem. You all know about that controversy. Well, due to the months of controversy, one Navy veteran has said he would not accept an award during any Saints game. With us now is retired Navy Commander John Wells of Slidell, Louisiana. He's the Executive Director of Military Veterans Advocacy. John, welcome to Washington Watch.
Thank you so much for having me. It's great to be here.
Well, John, first of all, tell our listeners what Military Veterans Advocacy is all about. What do you all do?
Well, we're a nonprofit 501c3 organization, and our job, as the name implies, is to advocate for those that are on active duty and veterans. In fact, I've worked with Tony Perkins a couple of times and General Boykin on things within the military, religious freedom issues. But, you know, primarily we have three main avenues that we pursue. First of all is legislation. We're up in Congress trying to get military veterans benefits. We worked with Ron Cruz from the Chaplains Alliance for Religious Liberty to get some good information and good provisions put into the National Defense Authorization Acts. We've also trying to get veterans benefits law enacted and basically try to keep Congress on their toes. Then we do litigation. We'll pursue litigation against service secretaries and of course, Secretary of Veterans Affairs, if necessary, to try to push our own agenda of getting benefits for the veterans. In fact, we have a couple of cases pending right now on veterans benefits that we hope are going to be resolved successfully. Our third aspect is education. And so, you know, we come out, we talk to civic groups, we come on shows like this. We also, conduct legal education training for lawyers so that they can become certified by the VA to practice VA law. So litigation, legislation, and education is our byword.
Very good. What's your web address in case people want to find out more about what you do?
Sure. It's www.militaryveteransadvocacy.org.
Very good. All right. Well, let's talk about this this award. It's the People's Health Champion Award that you were to receive. First of all, what is that award?
The award is designed to recognize people in Louisiana who, over the age of 65, continue to serve in their communities, or in this case, serve the veterans nationally. I hate to admit it, but I'm over 65. I'm actually 67 now, so sometimes I feel like I'm 77. But, you know, it was a very good honor. I mean, I was very excited about it when I was first notified of it, and I look forward to it. And that's before the problem started up with the NFL. And just for anybody who's listening that knows anything about people's health, I'm certainly not upset with them. They were very, very good. They worked very hard. I think I probably disappointed them a little bit, but they took it in good stead and said, you know, hey, we understand your position, and we're going to respect it. Unlike the Saints, who actually came back and, surprisingly, launched a little bit of an attack on me.
So tell our listeners what's your heart on this? What is the reason that you're going to receive the award, I assume, but you're just not going to do it on the field with the Saints?
No, I've declined the award completely.
Have you?
Because of the NFL taint. Here's the problem, and I did write a little article for The Hill. It was published on Wednesday night, I believe, to try to go into some of these things. But basically, you know, I spend my free time, a lot of my own money, advocating for veterans. How can I then accept something in an environment which is denigrating the flag that those veterans fought for? Okay. I was recently given an award by the Folds of Honor Society down in Baton Rouge, the Baton Rouge chapter. And, you know, that name, as it implies, it deals with the folds of the flag. I was very honored by that. That award is up in my conference room. It's hanging on the wall. How can I accept that award that deals with the folds of the flag that are presented to the next of kin and then walk into a stadium where people are taking a knee either during the national anthem or immediately before the national anthem? And, you know, it's this dog whistle of kneeling before the national anthem doesn't count as far as I'm concerned. That's just a way of trying to say, okay, we better watch our customer base here. And it's, in my opinion, it's just as disrespectful. But the big thing that really got me was we had a New Orleans police officer who was killed in the line of duty, and they had a moment of silence for that police officer, and they chose to kneel during that. That was way beyond the pale. And they tried to say, oh, well, we were down on the field and didn't hear it. Everybody in the stands heard it. You know, it's hard to believe that you can't hear it down on the field, number one. Number two, they should have, had an appreciation for what was going on rather than to kind of do their own thing. I'm not against the players trying to prevent police brutality. As an attorney, I've taken police brutality cases, and I've won. Nobody likes police brutality. The police don't like police brutality. I mean, when you see it, it's usually a very isolated incident. But the way they have chosen to protest is not inclusive, it's divisive. You know, Martin Luther King carried the American flag wherever he went. He pledged allegiance to it. He respected it. He carried it. And this group just has adopted a divisive tactic. Hey, I'm an old military guy. If you've got a tactic that doesn't work, you change tactics. And these guys need to do that.
Well, John, thanks so much for coming on Washington Watch today. We appreciate your service and also what your organization does. So thanks so much.
Thank you so much.
Well, coming up next, 40 Days for Life has recently ended its fall campaign, and we're going to get some very positive reports about the results of this pro-life cause that goes on all over the world. We'll be talking with Steve Carlin when we return, and you're listening to Washington Watch. This is Evan Fowler with Bot Radio Network sitting in today for Tony Perkins. Perkins, stay with us. We'll be back here in just a couple of minutes.
Every day, the Christian worldview is increasingly being pushed out of the public square and out of public policy. Family Research Council is an organization that works to advance faith, family, and freedom in public policy and culture from a Christian worldview. We want you to know that we are your advocate in our nation's capital. To learn more about FRC, go to frc.org and follow us on social media to receive our action alerts and stay up to date on the latest news.
Is being right enough to win an election? Political history proves otherwise. The candidate who organizes and communicates the best will beat the opposition, no matter how right the other side is. Christians who are running for public office have a moral obligation to study and learn how to win. They must discover the real nature of politics. Robert Ornakis is one of the country's top political trainers. Hear him discuss the real nature of politics and how to overcome the odds to win an election at frc.org/speakers. The Family Research Council had the pleasure of hosting Dr. Michael Paulson to speak about how Christians can respond to arguments against religious liberty. Dr. Paulson argues that religion is different and deems exemptions within the law. A religious person believes in God, and God's sovereignty requires complete devotion, whereas government only requires allegiance and civil duties. The Constitution itself treats religion differently, giving America religious liberty and the freedom to exercise. Visit frc.org/university to hear more about this issue.
If you had to make a law, where would you start? America's founding fathers determined law from a fixed source, God, but culture has shifted the focus to man's self-determined law. If truth is no longer determined by God, it becomes subjective and open to interpretation. In an incisive new paper, Peter Johnston traces the origins of these dangerous trends in American law and the importance of staying true to our founding principles. To view FRC's new publication, go to frc.org/decay.
Welcome back to Washington Watch. Eben Fowler sitting in today for Tony Perkins. Well, we're going to talk about 40 Days for Life. And I want to give out our phone number because in our final segment, what I would like to do is ask for some of you 40 Days for Life folks, people who have participated in a 40 Days for Life campaign, to give us a call and tell us what the experience was like. The number is 866-372-7234, 866-372-7234. We'll take your calls in the last segment starting at about 42 after the hour, sometime in that area. And for those of you who don't know what 40 Days for Life is, we're going to learn you about it because it's a fantastic organization that does things all over the world. It has campaigns all over the world. Steve Carlin is the North American Campaign Director for 40 Days for Life, and Steve is going to be joining us for the rest of the program. Steve, welcome to Washington Watch.
Thank you so much. It's great to be with you today.
All right. So I'm not going to assume that everybody knows what 40 Days for Life is about. So I'm going to give you this kind of this first section here to pretend like you're talking to somebody who's never heard of it. What does 40 Days for Life do?
Yes, 40 Days for Life hosts twice a year an internationally coordinated campaign for 40 straight days aimed at ending abortion through three simple components. First of all, prayer and fasting, really the bedrock foundation of all that we do as people of faith. Secondly, community outreach to educate our communities on the tragic reality of the abortion crisis where we live. And third of all, and this is perhaps what is perhaps the most distinguishing feature about what we do, is we stand and pray peacefully in front of abortion facilities all day, every day, for 40 straight days at a time, in conjunction with these communities all around the world. So that's what we're up to, and we've been blessed to see the Lord answer a lot of prayers, save a lot of lives, and change a lot of hearts over the last 10 years that we've been around.
That's right, and I'm going to mention it is your 10th anniversary. You're going into your 11th year. How did it get started? Who started this?
You know, back in 2004 in College Station, Texas, there was a Planned Parenthood that opened up back in the late 90s, and a local pro-life organization called the Coalition for Life had done everything they could think of to try to get that Planned Parenthood abortion facility out of town and to end the abortion crisis locally. They had done political efforts, they had done educational efforts, marketing, everything you can think of, and they continued to see the number of abortions in that community go up and up and up. And so they really, in a moment of frustration, they did what they now admit they should have done all along. They sat down around an old wooden table in their office, and they asked God what he would have them do. And certainly, whether it's politics or education or marketing, all of those approaches are valid, but as people of faith, we need to recognize it begins with prayer. And so during that hour of prayer, these four individuals felt the Lord place on their hearts the number 40, a number that we see all throughout biblical history, 40 days, 40 years. And they felt the Lord calling them to these three components of prayer and fasting, community outreach, and peaceful vigil. So they launched a one-time campaign. It was never expected that this 40 Days for Life effort would be replicated again in that community or in any other. But the abortion rate went through the floor during that campaign, and cities around the country began to follow in their footsteps. And before you know it, within 3 years, the first ever nationally coordinated 40 Days for Life campaign was launched in 89 cities and 33 states. It's continued to spread throughout the U.S., and then the world came knocking, and we've got campaigns all around the world.
All right. Well, give us some statistics, say, from this most recent campaign. My understanding is this has been the biggest and the best in terms of numbers of cities, numbers of participants, and because you keep track of all this data, don't you?
We do. We have 375 cities all around the world participating right now. That's the U.S., that's Latin America, that's both Western and Eastern Europe, Africa, Australia. We've had campaigns on all six populated continents, and we've seen 750,000 people get involved in 40 Days for Life, 19,000 churches. So those things are exciting, and we love to talk about having been to 47 different countries around the world. And I think it shows really the unity of the body of Christ, different people, different cultures, different time zones, different languages, but that one shared language of prayer. And that's why we see some of the numbers that I really get excited to talk about. We still have reports of saved babies coming in, those mothers who choose life at the very last moment because they see somebody praying for them in front of the abortion facility. We know of more than 600 lives saved during this campaign alone, and that has us right on the doorstep of 14,000 over the course of the last decade. So very exciting campaign, a lot of energy, a lot of enthusiasm. The Lord blessed us with good weather, making it just a little bit easier to stand out in front of those abortion facilities. And my goodness, has it been exciting to see these reports continue to come in.
Yeah, and you know, and the most important number, of course, I mean, it's great to have 375 cities. That's awesome all around the world. And it's great to have thousands and thousands and thousands of people who are gathering and praying together. But the best number is the babies who are saved. These are actual lives saved. And that's the thing that folks need to keep in mind, because I've seen some photographs of people at some of the past campaigns standing in the snow and the wind, and it's not easy to do it, is it?
It's not, and it's remarkable, though. As much as we enjoyed some of the beautiful weather that much of the U.S. saw this fall, it turns out that in our spring campaign, at least we call it spring, a lot of times it's late winter, but we see folks out in February and early March, and sometimes it's those bad weather months and days and rain, whatever you have, that's when the babies are saved the most, because I think it really touches the human heart a little bit more. There's no mistaking that this is some sort of front for a political agenda. There's no idea that we're out there waging this so-called war on women. Nothing less than the love of Christ is going to bring somebody out. And that really has led a lot of women to choose life, where maybe they otherwise would have ignored those people out in front of the abortion center.
That's absolutely right. Well, we're going to come back. We're going to hold Steve over the break. And we're going to take your phone calls at 866-372-7234, 866-372-7234. If you've been involved in a 40 Days for Life campaign, or if you want to ask questions about what it's like to be out there in front of an abortion clinic praying, just give us a call, 866-372-7234. We'll be back after this break.
Are you worried about the moral direction of America? Do you feel powerless to make a difference? Family Research Council is an organization that works to advance faith, family, and freedom in public policy and culture from a Christian worldview. Established in 1983 in Washington, D.C., Family Research Council conducts research, develops policy, drafts legislation, and educates policymakers, pastors, and the grassroots. It testifies before Congress and shapes public debate through the media and internet. Every day, the Christian worldview is increasingly being pushed out of the public square and out of public policy. We want you to know that we are your advocate in our nation's capital. To learn more about Family Research Council, please visit us at frc.org and follow us on social media to receive our action alerts and stay up to date on the latest news. Again, that's frc.org.
In a free country like ours, it's easy to forget that slavery still exists. Human beings are being trafficked and sold for sex against their will. Human trafficking is a horrifying scourge that continues to haunt America, particularly through the proliferation of illegal online transactions between traffickers and buyers. As part of the FRC Speaker Series, Congresswoman Ann Wagner discusses congressional anti-human trafficking initiatives and how the conservative community can best be engaged in combating this horrific crime. Congresswoman Wagner, who introduced highly anticipated legislation in April that allows states and victims to fight online sex trafficking, focuses on online sex trafficking via Backpage.com and other websites, and confronting the demand for sex trafficking in American culture. Find out more about Congresswoman Wagner's recent legislation and ways you can help stop trafficking at frc.org/speakers. Again, that is frc.org/speakers.
If you had to make a law, where would you start? America's founding fathers determined law from a fixed source, God. But culture has shifted the focus to man's self-determined law. If truth is no longer determined by God, it becomes subjective and open to interpretation. In an incisive new paper, Peter Johnston traces the origins of these dangerous trends in American law and the importance of staying true to our founding principles. To view FRC's new publication, go to frc.org/decay.
The Family Research Council had the pleasure of hosting Dr. Michael Paulson to speak about how Christians can respond to arguments against religious liberty. Dr. Paulson argues that religion is different and deems exemptions within the law. A religious person believes in God, and God's sovereignty requires complete devotion, whereas government only requires allegiance and civil duties. The Constitution itself treats religion differently, giving America religious liberty and the freedom to exercise. Visit frc.org/university to hear more about this issue.
Welcome back to Washington Watch. Eben Fowler with Bot Radio Network sitting in today for Tony Perkins. And let me give you a little bit of info here. FRC.org is the website, FRC.org, for more information about Family Research Council. And if you do /radio, you can listen to today's program a little bit later this evening if you just have to hear it again, or any program, any past program. Tony's Twitter handle is @TPerkins, @TPerkins. Mine is @EbenFowler. Would love to have you want to throw one of those tweet things our way if you would like to, if you do that sort of thing. Well, Steve Carlin is on the line. He's the North American Campaign Director for 40 Days for Life. And let me give our phone number out again, 866-372-7234, 866-372-7234. Love to hear from you. If either you've been involved in a 40 Days for Life campaign or you'd like to talk to Steve and learn more about it. Steve, thanks again for being with us on Washington Watch today.
My pleasure.
Okay, so I've got a couple of questions for you. First of all, tell us some of the stories from the sidewalk. And when I say sidewalk, what I mean by that is that if you're participating in a 40 Days for Life campaign, you're generally standing on a sidewalk outside of an abortion clinic. You've probably had people, Steve, who have not done it before, and they say that's a little bit too much. And first of all, I want to make it clear, this is not a protest, is it? It's not a protest at all.
No, we always note that protests are against something. This is a vigil. We're for something. We are for God's gift for life. And sometimes I think folks who haven't been involved in this sort of an effort before, they might be inclined to think that perhaps, you know, we're out there shouting, maybe it's confrontational, maybe it's angry, and it's not at all like that at all. You join any 40 Days for Life campaign, you know, we try to go all day, every day. It's a marathon, not a sprint, so it's usually not going to be some sort of a big rally type of scene. It's usually two people or three people that are silently standing in prayer. Perhaps they're holding a sign, perhaps they're reading scripture, they might be singing, but it's something that is bringing God's joy and God's peace to a place that doesn't have any of God's peace. So it's a very calm thing. And that's why, you know, we talked before the break about the number of babies that we have seen that have been saved through 40 Days for Life. We also have learned of 157 different abortion workers who have experienced conversion, left their jobs, and begun a walk with Christ through this campaign. I think that really illustrates the peaceful and life-affirming nature of this work, because if we were out there filled with anger, those workers would never turn to us, but they now have done so 157 times throughout history. We had a great story from one of our local campaign leaders. We always want to protect the identities and the futures of these workers who courageously leave their jobs. So I can't say where it's from, but there was a sidewalk counselor reaching out to a woman she thought maybe was post-abortive that just had the abortion. And this SUV stopped at the foot of the driveway and gestured the sidewalk counselor over, and she said, "I'm sorry, I'm so sorry, I'm so sorry." Our sidewalk counselor said, "Well, what are you sorry for?" This was an abortion worker who just had the sense. She had, I don't know if it was quite a vision, but she had just this understanding that she was being prayed for personally by all of the people that were coming day in and day out, and that moved her to quit her job. She made a lot of money. It wasn't a good time for her to look for a job. She said, "You know, I'm told that you guys don't care about us," but when our sidewalk counselor pulled out her wallet and offered her every last bit of money to help tide her over until she found a new job, she really learned that this really truly is a compassionate movement of people who love the Lord, and we love our brothers and sisters, whether they're in the womb or whether they're working at an abortion agency. We are there with love for them.
Well, you know, that reminds me of the story of Abby Johnson. Tell us a little bit about Abby Johnson, who she is and what happened to her, because it's a similar story.
Yeah, Abby Johnson was actually the Planned Parenthood Employee of the Year in Texas back in 2008. She had had numerous 40 Days for Life campaigns in front of her workplace. She actually worked at the first Planned Parenthood where 40 Days for Life started. And she went into work one day and witnessed for the very first time an ultrasound-guided abortion. Usually Planned Parenthood, where she worked, was not involving ultrasounds in their abortions, but this particular abortion provider did. And it really shook her to her core as she saw this little baby fight for his life and ultimately lose that fight. And she knew she had to get out. And, of course, she turned where so many other abortion workers have. She turned to the people out on the sidewalk. She had been criticizing and very vocally opposed to these 40 Days for Life volunteers in the media for years. But now here she was aligning herself with those same prayer volunteers. And to put it in perspective, I believe that Abby was something like the 28th worker of those 157 to leave their jobs. She went on to start her own ministry called And Then There Were None, where she has helped hundreds of other abortion workers leave. So just these ripples of God's grace continue to extend throughout time and space, and we've got a lot of hearts that have been healed as a result.
Yeah, that's amazing. It is amazing. And one of the things that Abby Johnson said, and recently I heard she was at a seminar actually here in Kansas City talking to folks who work for pregnancy resource centers. One of the things that she told that group was that when there are people out there, you know, yelling and protesting with signs, it drives women into the clinic. When there are 40 Days for Life folks out there praying a peaceful, prayerful vigil, what happens is they have to hire escorts to drag the women into the Planned Parenthood or whatever the abortion clinic is, because that peaceful, prayerful vigil attracts people as opposed to protests, which is amazing. Well, Virginia is on the line, or rather Susan is on the line from Virginia, and she wants to know how to get involved. Virginia, or rather Susan, welcome to Washington Watch.
Thank you.
So what's your question?
I missed the part where you told how to get in touch with people for Washington, the watch, whatever it is.
Well, Steve, tell Susan and the rest of our listeners who are interested how they can get involved in a 40 Days for Life campaign.
That's it.
Well, I'd encourage you to visit our website, 40daysforlife.com. We just wrapped up our final campaign for this year, but we will be starting once again on February 14th. That'll go for 40 days until March 25th all around the world. If you think, gosh, my community doesn't have a 40 Days for Life campaign, I'd like to bring it to where I live and see lives saved and workers converted, we're going to start taking applications. You can apply to lead a 40 Days for Life campaign where you live starting on December 1st. But go to 40daysforlife.com, sign up for our email list. You can email me, steve@40daysforlife.com, and we want to continue to see this work grow far and wide.
Susan, thanks so much for calling. Yeah, 40 days, that's 40daysforlife.com, right? Not spelling out the word. Or does it work either way?
That's right.
All right. Well, tell us some of the stories from this most recent campaign. Again, it was the biggest. It had the largest participation, the largest number of cities around the world. Tell us some of the neat stories that you've heard from this last campaign, which, by the way, ended last Sunday.
One of the things that really excited me, we had a campaign in Canada. Mississauga, Ontario, to be exact. This is one of the Toronto suburbs. And our leaders were wrapping up from the campaign. They were organizing their files, their signs, their flyers, their brochures, their sign-in documents, just looking through all of it. And they found an envelope that had so far escaped their attention. They opened up the envelope, and it just said, you know, very broken English, but dear pastor, you know, my husband and I were coming for an abortion, and, you know, we didn't really know what to do. We're not from this country. Our relatives are all in a different country. And we were going to do it, and then we saw you, and we saw the smiles of the people that were out praying. We saw their love, and we realized, you know what, a broken heart isn't worth the money that we're going to save by not welcoming this child into the world. And so just a letter thanking them for being there, thanking them for the love that they showed, really awakening their conscience to the dignity of the child that was in this woman's womb. We had another location in New Jersey where there was a couple that was going for an abortion, and the sidewalk counselors were actually able to reach out to the boyfriend. And they spoke with him, and they said, you've got to go in there and bring her out. She needs your support. She needs your encouragement. And he said, you know, I'm out of work. I don't have a car. My car broke down. Well, they ended up offering, one of the volunteers on hand just said, you know what, I've got a car I was going to sell. Take my car. Use it if you need it. And in fact, after they chose life, this man went home, and he got a call offering the job that he had been looking for. So, you know, we don't always see those stories come together so quickly and so smoothly like that. But when we put ourselves in position to trust the Lord and to ask God, you know, it's knocking at that door, and the Lord answers it all the time.
The number's 866-372-7234, 866-372-7234. Steve Carlin, the North American Campaign Director for 40 Days for Life, is on the line with us this afternoon. Well, apparently Planned Parenthood is kind of noticing what's going on here, and other abortion providers, organizations. So what is some of the feedback that you're hearing?
One of the things that we've seen over and over again is Planned Parenthood puts out this Pledge a Picketer program where they try to suggest that we are protesters, that we are picketers. Really, we're not, but I think it makes for better PR on their part. And they say, you know what, we want people to come donate, you know, X dollars for every person who's out here so-called picketing us. And it's really been kind of interesting because the Planned Parenthood in Nashville, Tennessee, put out one of these campaigns, and they accused 40 Days for Life volunteers of intimidating their clients, of harassing their clients. But the photos that they included in this little advertisement didn't really match that. You saw somebody in a straw hat on the knees praying on the hard concrete sidewalk. You see a group of other folks standing there huddled together just praying peacefully. We saw in New Orleans, this story really cracks me up. You mentioned pregnancy centers earlier. During the campaign, an abortion-minded woman left Planned Parenthood and went across the street to the pregnancy center, and one of the employees of Planned Parenthood followed her, marched into that office, and started yelling at her that if she didn't come back to Planned Parenthood or move her car, at least, that they were going to have her towed. There's been a little bit of a meltdown internationally where we don't necessarily have the freedom of speech that we enjoy in the United States. The abortion lobby has actually been working on establishing buffer zones or bubble zones where it's basically, you know, the free speech of pro-lifers is not allowed. And this is the case in Ontario. They very hastily put together a law that was just enacted last month, and it's being debated in parts of England as well. So something we've got to keep an eye on, but, you know, sometimes you can be out there and you wonder, gosh, I haven't seen a baby saved in my community. Does this really work? Well, we know it does, but if we ever have any doubts, we can look at the response of the abortion industry, which has been so desperate to try to discourage 40 Days for Life, and we know that it's making an impact on their bottom line.
Yeah, well, they tell Planned Parenthood in particular tells lots of lies about all kinds of things, including what pregnancy resource centers do and what they're all about. Vanessa is calling from Oklahoma. Vanessa, welcome to Washington Watch.
Hello. I'm legally blind, and I would love to be a part of that. You know, finding transportation be hard, but I'm sure if I trusted in God, he could help me. Is there a way where I could do that?
Absolutely. We even have a leader in Australia, I believe, who is blind himself, leading a campaign. And so when we get the next campaign going, I would encourage you to find out where the closest campaign is to you and to go out and be part of it. You know, we talk about Planned Parenthood. We talk about the abortion industry. One of the things that is always a part of the agenda is the abortion of folks with disabilities. And maybe that's blindness, maybe it's some other situation, but I think you can be a great witness to the dignity of human life, even though you don't have that ability to see. And I would really encourage that, and God bless you for your interest.
Thank
you.
Yeah,
absolutely. Yeah, thank you, Vanessa. So does that help?
Yeah, that does.
All right. Well, that'd be great to have you involved there in Oklahoma. Well, we've got another caller on the line, and I happen to know this person. Her name is Annie. She's my wife. Annie, welcome to Washington Watch. I understand you've been involved in 40 Days for Life some.
Yes. Good to talk to you and the audience. I want to say that participation is a privilege and an honor. Abortion is very tangible. And when you stand in proximity to an abortion facility and you see the structure where the abortions are occurring, and you see vulnerable, abortion-minded women and men entering those doors, you are struck with just how much of a reality abortion is in the community in which you live. And I also want to say that it is happening on our watch, and we do care, and we do want to do what we can do. 40 Days for Life, as Steve Carlin said, is a three-pronged approach. And that three-pronged approach is a powerful tool when it is given to God, and we are asking for his blessing and enabling to do something and to do a significant something, because it's coupled with prayer, to turn, to end abortion, to turn it around, to end it. So just as abortion is tangible, Christ's love is more tangible. And that's what we want to demonstrate with our life-affirming, praying, caring, compassionate presence. Christ's love is tangible. We can make a difference.
Steve, I wanted to, you know, earlier, and thank you, Annie, that's exactly right, what you said about when you stand outside of an abortion clinic. And Steve, earlier, you know, I sort of alluded to that. I was going to ask you when somebody comes up to you and says, you know, I'm not really comfortable with that, because, again, as Annie just said, it really brings it right there. When you're looking at that building and you're seeing women going in and out of there, how do you answer that question when somebody comes to you with that trepidation?
I always encourage folks to go out one time. Just go out for 1 hour, and if at the end of that hour you say, you know what, I hated that, I never want to do it again, okay, I respect that. But it's very rare that happens. Usually people are reluctant to go. Sometimes it's like working out. Like, you don't want to go work out, but you're glad that you did. I think 40
yeah.
Days for Life can be like that. You go, and you're glad that you did. And sometimes you have a harder time leaving than you did coming in the first place. Because
That's fantastic. Steve, sorry to interrupt you there. Steve Carlin is the North American Campaign Director for 40 Days for Life. And the web address to get more information is 40daysforlife.com. That's 40daysforlife.com. Eben Fowler sitting in today on Washington Watch. Thanks so much for listening today.
Washington Watch with Tony Perkins is a production of the Family Research Council in Washington, D.C. For more information on anything you heard today, or if you'd like to find out how you can support the ongoing efforts of the Family Research Council, visit TonyPerkins.com. Also, to leave a comment about Washington Watch, call our new watch line at 1-866-372-7234. That's 1-866-372-7234.